You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer. Today, I have the great pleasure of chatting with Gary Guymon, who is joining me from the Cincinnati area, I think. Is that right? Are you in Ohio or Kentucky?
I'm in Kentucky. I'm okay. Right across the river from Cincinnati. When I look out my office window, which I'm at my house right now, but when I look out my office window, I look at the great Bengals Stadium. We can say great now because they finally went to the Super Bowl after years and years of heartbreak. So, yeah, right across the river.
Well, congratulations to them. As regular listeners to this program know, I have no idea what you're talking about because it's sports related. But what I do know a bit about is marketing, business, and entrepreneurship. And I once heard the term an entrepreneur described to me as someone who solves problems for profit. And I thought, that's a great way to sort of think about entrepreneurship, because ultimately most businesses are built around addressing a problem, a need, a want, a desire. And right before we hit record, you said something that prompted that reminder of the definition of entrepreneur. You were talking about how you really focus your time and attention on problems, and that if you're presented with one, you are determined to find a way to solve it, address it, fix it, and really to you know, whatever extent I've gotten to know you in the few minutes that we were chatting before hitting recording, it's really the basis not only of the work that you've done in your own businesses, but in supporting your clients as well.
That's correct. I follow a lot of different people online. I probably call a few of them mentors in a couple of their coaching programs, actually. But the ones that I really take a lot of heart from say this, and that is, the bigger the problem you can solve, the more money you can make. And that is kind of the launching pad from what you were talking about in terms of figuring out what problem a customer or a prospect is having in whatever space it may be. I focus my problem solving related to sales and marketing primarily, but figuring out what problems they're having in certain processes, and then figuring out a way that we can solve it. And not just solve it, but use things like automation or innovation and utilize those types of techniques and tools to be able to overcome it in ways that make it easy, make it simple for business owners who maybe don't want to get in and dive in and understand all the minutiae related to it, but they know if we have this process in place, it's going to help us overcome whatever problem or solution that is. So I've been very focused on that, really, in all of my business life, is figuring out how to solve a problem, and then can we automate it? Can we innovate something to be able to do that? And current company, you know, we've automated a few processes that help in those regards, and that's what has really helped us with clients see results as well as get referrals, which are always great too. I think in terms of what businesses want to see from a marketing perspective is, number one, leads. How can I get more customers, which obviously are going to make them more money? How can we do this in a way that doesn't take up all my time? Because if you think about it, all the marketing processes that exist, you know, from writing copy to determining an audience to figuring out, you know, how you present that copy to that audience, it takes a lot of time. And what we do is we try to give the customer an easy button, and we either do it or we automate it so they don't have to do it. And I try to focus on that in everything that we approach with clients now, and what I've done in the past as well.
How would you like to become part of the More Perfect Marketing family? You can when you join our free online community, More Perfect Marketers. Inside, you'll get access to our collection of marketing cheat sheets to help you streamline your business growth, as well as the videos from David's Niche Challenge, which will teach you the counterintuitive approach to selling more by focusing on a narrower audience. To join for free, please visit mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. Now back to the show.
All right. I want to talk about what you've done in the past, because you weren't always a marketer. You worked in the financial world. You worked in the construction world. You worked in the home services world. And then eventually something, I hope to uncover what, triggered the idea of getting into the marketing space. So why don't you sort of walk us through a little bit of that history?
Yeah, well, I would say this, David. I've always been involved in sales and marketing. My strength has always been acquiring leads. So I had a mortgage brokerage company for about 10 years, and I was able to acquire and attract talent, other loan officers, to come work for me because I could produce a lot of leads. At the time, we did some things with triggers related to credit reports. So when somebody had a credit report that was pulled, we had locked in deals with their credit reporting agencies. We would get notification, name, phone number, email of who that person was. And we would reach out via our telemarketing department to obviously, to get applications to give to our loan officers to work. And so, you know, where most companies in that space in the late 90s through, late 2000s, their job was to go out and network with realtors. I got loan officers who understood how to structure loans. And here's 3 to 4 leads every day that you can work, that you don't have to go bang down realtor doors. And in fact, you can call realtors and say, hey, here's a loan. I'll give you a loan. You give me a customer. Mm-hmm. And that was my strength, was I'm going to go find leads and then teach these guys how to present, sell, and close. And the more leads I can get, the more loan officers I can bring in. So, you know, that piece of it has always been very, very enticing to me. I remember when I first started in the mortgage industry, had no clue about the industry. And I was recruited by these two guys who own this company, and they liked they liked my tenacity. I think I was 22, 23 years old. You know, I didn't understand what the word no really meant then. I still don't, but I just didn't even pay attention to no, and was just always driving. And they basically were crazy people and said, hey, we want you to come, we'll teach you. And then if you can grow something for us, grow it. So for 3 years, that's what we did. And we grew a company that was just two owners up to about 75 loan officers, about 20 processors, a company of over 100 people, 3 locations. And we did it because of this one thing. I remember my first week, the one partner who was closer to my age, I said to him, so what am I supposed to really be doing? Right. And he goes, well, you got to find people who need to refinance. I was like, okay, so how do you find that? He goes, well, in the courthouse, there are deeds, and in the deeds, there are encumbrances called mortgages. And you just go and find all of the high interest rate mortgage lenders, write those people down, go to the phone book. And for anybody, you know, listening that's only in their 20s, we used to have this book instead of Google. And we had to look up the names, find their phone numbers, and I called them. And I remember the first customer that I called, and I drive by this house probably once or twice a month because we have friends in that neighborhood. A lady in her late 70s, she had a grandson who had a drug problem, and he had racked up a ton of credit card debt, $30,000, $40,000. She had this house that she had a ton of equity in, but she was basically giving all of her Social Security money to pay off these credit cards because she wasn't going to not pay her credit cards. And so we were able to, number one, I was able to negotiate with the credit card companies to cut that in half, and was able to take that credit card debt, put it into her home, only add probably about $10,000 or $15,000 in debt to her equity, but I reduced her payments by 80%. And I remember at the closing, she basically cried. Well, two things. One, like being able to win and give a win to somebody is that's better than any drug. I've never done drugs, but it's better than any drug. Definitely better than alcohol, that's for sure. And two, the fact that, you know, she was just so elated by that, like, okay, now I gotta do this more, right? And so I just put my head down, there's about 5 courthouses close by in this market. And I spent 2 or 3 weeks just going to courthouses and pulling all the data that I could. And I learned that if you just pick up the phone and you call people, they will talk to you. And through that process, I really got focused on both marketing and sales. And the sales piece of it is what has taken me from, you know, that to starting my own mortgage company to then I had a home service company that was scaled and sold and now into digital marketing. That sales piece has gotten me there, but the marketing is what fuels all that. And so, you know, I think doing doing both of those processes together and understanding that both of those processes have to be in sync. Every time I talk to a business or a company and they're trying to grow, trying to create revenue, there's a problem with either one of those processes or both of those processes. You know, the marketing piece, they're not generating enough leads. They're not generating enough leads from the type of prospect they need to be generating them from, or the sales piece of it, like they're afraid to follow up. I've called them twice in the past 2 weeks, and I feel like if I call or email or do something else, like I'm going to bug them. So helping them understand what a marketing process and funnel should look like and then what a sales process should look like has always been where we kind of separate ourselves currently, but it's always been what I've used to grow and to scale everything that I've been involved with. So that began on that very, you know, first week in that mortgage industry. And then, you know, I created a telemarketing basically department in our company where we had 18 to 20 telemarketing agents on automated dialers that we were talking to prospects constantly and generating leads. And from those leads, I was able to recruit loan officers, close loans, and really grow and create something that was really special for a lot of people. We always focused on how can we do something better? How can we do something quicker? And how can we do it in a way that makes it easy for the client? I think too many businesses get caught up in not understanding what their currency is. You know, what is their value? Like, for instance, in the home service space, you ask a guy, okay, what's your value? He's going to say things like, we're insured. We have wrapped trucks. We have pretty uniforms. They have a great website. None of those are your value, right? That's features and benefits. Like, what is the reason why a company does business with you? And I say our currency with my company and all of my companies has been around a couple of things. One is speed. Like, how quickly can you get something done, deliver results? So speed. The other one is just being clarity. How easy can you make this so that the prospect or the client can just take step one, step two, step three, and they see results? And if you can make your currency be speed and clarity, then you put something together that makes it simple, and it's a no-brainer for clients to want to do business with you, regardless of what space you're in.
I love, there's so much we can go back into there that you outlined, but I want to come back to something that you shared earlier about the path of more resistance that fewer people took in the mortgage industry was the path you decided to take, right? Because you didn't have the competition there from all of the other folks who were going out to those realtors, right? You took a path that was going to be time consuming potentially. You got great information and ultimately got great results. And then you also talked about this particular client that you had, and there was a story there. It was a person and a real life situation, as opposed to, hey, I can get you a better, you know, rate.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, just those two things gave you an opportunity to position yourself in a way that very few other people in that space are willing to take the time to build out, because it's a lot easier to simply, you know, take the easier path.
Yeah. I mean, do what everybody else has always done. So like the big thing you're talking about in the financial space, and if there's anybody listening that is in that space, okay, everybody is going, you know, let's say we'll do it from the mortgage loan end of it. Everybody's going to realtors and asking them for loans. That's what everybody does, right? You start in any mortgage company and they're going to say, or bank, they're going to say, so what you got to do is you got to find people that are buying houses. Well, who has home buyers? Realtors. So what I did was like, okay, what do realtors need? Realtors need approved buyers, right? So we took it a step further from just what I was telling you of how I started. And we used to use Saturdays in our telemarketing department, and I would target apartment complexes that we knew required high credit and had high payments for rent. And we would call those renters and we'd say, you know, you probably qualify for a home loan. If you're interested, we can do that qualification for free. Are you interested? Well, 70% of people we talked to said yes. So we would have pre-qualified buyers with great credit, and we go to realtors. And you're not, you know, under RESPA, you're not allowed to give money or give things to people to induce them to do business. But I can say I have a qualified buyer and I want to work with someone who wants to be my partner. And a partner then will return to me somebody who needs financing. Mm-hmm. So I give you a buyer, they need a house, you give me somebody that needs financing. And we would work, we would gain relationships with realtors because of that, because we were taking something to them. Too many times in business, we go with our hand out. And what we should be doing is going with our something in our hand giving. I always tell people that one of the best ways to build your name in a community is to become a connector. You know, this guy who does this and this guy who does this, and you connect them, or somebody who needs their services. Hey, John does this. You can call John. And all of a sudden, Gary is a connector. And so people want to help Gary because he's helped them. And if you look at your business and that function, regardless of what it is you do, if you're providing value, if you're giving value, you know, you can call it karma or whatever you want to call it, that is going to come back to you if you're doing it consistently and it truly is valuable. And that's what we did in that mortgage space that was totally different than anybody else in our market and probably in a lot of markets, to where I wasn't going and taking donuts to realtors like everybody else and handing out rate sheets. Like, we was going with loans. Hey, here is an approved buyer. He has 10% down, 720 credit score, and he can buy a $250,000 house. What can you show him? And we started to build relationships because of that.
So you're now in a business where you are helping others grow their businesses. You're helping them either figure out revenue generation, lead generation, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And obviously what you've just been talking about is highly applicable to pretty much any sort of business, you know, build relationships, set yourself apart, et cetera. What I'm curious to hear, because I understand, you know, that your focus may be in the digital, you know, world, which so many businesses are focused on, but you've just been spending a bit of time talking about relationship, things that happen offline. How do those two connect in your world?
Well, I think it's this, you know, we probably have about 110 clients, let's say somewhere around in that. And probably, 70% of those clients are trying to scale to a point that is either double or triple their revenue. And I look at it this way. Digital is going to get you some of that. But if you're putting all of your eggs in the digital basket, if there is something that hiccups, you know, you're dealing with Google, Facebook, social media, there's algorithms. And the things that these platforms like to do is change their algorithms so people like me can't keep figuring it out. And they play that game of doing that. So you have to have a multiple approach. And I always coach our clients in looking at least five sources that are giving you at least 10% of your revenue. Now, one of those sources might be giving you 40 or 50 mm-hmm. and another 20, but you have five sources giving you at least 10% of your revenue. Because the hardest thing in business is overcoming the ups and downs. You know, one month you hit a peak, you worked your butt off, you produced leads, revenue came in. The next month, because you weren't doing that, you were servicing them, it goes down. So we're constantly focusing on trying to get as many lead sources as possible. So while while we specialize in search, and that's where, you know, we live a lot, we also do things like customer marketing via email. And set up SMS campaigns for their customer marketing. So they're constantly touching that customer database. We talk about acquiring data. One of the things I think people don't do enough of or realize enough of, if you look at the latest billionaire list, most of them are billionaire because they have data. They know what we're doing. You know, Amazon is so successful because they've developed enough data that they know when Gary is going to get on their site and look at stuff to buy. And if I don't get on there enough, they're going to find me on other sites to say, don't forget about us. And so that data is what makes them so powerful. So we talk a lot about, and we coach our clients a lot on not just living in the digital space, but looking at your relationships, your customers, your prospects, understanding the data and how to use the data. And I really get involved with helping helping clients look at their community as their market and being involved in the community. I always say this, you should be investing in your community, you should be involved in your community, and you should be doing enough for your community that people know who you are. I try to do that, not just in my local community, but in the communities that we work in terms of, you know, the different verticals that we're in. My wife and I, we get really heavily involved with some charitable things related to kids. And like, I call on favors at the end of the year to help us for that. But all through the year, clients, whoever, if they have, you know, charity that they're trying to drive, I'm putting dollars there. Why? Because when it's my turn, I'm going to come back and say, hey, I need this. So in the client, you know, to our clients, I'm telling them, you should be doing the same thing. You should be invested. You should be involved. And if you're doing those things, then the community is going to be aware of your brand, be aware of what you're doing, because you can't just focus on the digital piece and you can't just focus on traditional pieces. You have to be looking at everything from every angle. Otherwise, you're going to be a one trick or two trick pony. And when things happen economically, or there's a change on a platform, I could really mess up your business. And to keep that from happening, you have to be able to have multiple sources that are driving revenue for you.
Yeah, you talked a bit about the businesses that you're working in different verticals. You have a strong presence in the services space, home services. Mm-hmm. I think you also do a little bit of work in the professional services.
Correct.
As well. Walk us through a little bit of what you were just talking about in terms of how pick the industry you want, how a client of yours might, you know, sort of build out their relationship with clients, their presence, you know, what's important in search, what's important in the other means of communications, just so we can sort of dimensionalize what you were talking about.
Yeah. So like if we look at it from, let's say, we'll say from a realtor's perspective, a realtor probably has, especially right now, probably has most competition of almost any space that there is, because everybody got their real estate license in the last 5 or 6 years. And real estate prices were going crazy, but now you're at a point to where the market's settling somewhere. Like, I don't necessarily know it's going to settle down and settle up. Like, it's settling. Like, it's settling. So people that just got in to get, you know, to get quick riches, they're going to be gone. So what, you know, you look at your business from that perspective of what are you doing to build a bulletproof business? So I think it starts even before the marketing piece, like defining what your mission statement is and defining your core values. And once you define that, then you go and you target relationships, both networking type relationships that I was talking about, that connection piece. You make yourself visible in the community based on those core values. And then you build out, you make sure that your marketing platform digitally is built out around the things that you're trying to accomplish. The number one space that I think any business should be found in, especially service business, professional service businesses, should be Google Maps. It's a local search platform. It's where people go in communities to find local businesses. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find a national company typically in that local search. You're going to see Home Depot and that type of thing, but you're not going to see some big national brand in local search, unless they're a franchise, yep. Right? So there is a local person behind that. And so making sure that your positioning in Google Maps is solid is to me is the most important thing related to search. From the other perspective, when you talk about social, so search is being found and social is being present. With social, you have to, number one, identify who your target prospects are and then have messaging around that. But the biggest miss that business owners that business owners have on social is they just want to talk about business. And I don't know about you, but if I just listen to somebody talk about business, I get bored real quick. Mm-hmm. And so, which is the majority of the population. Yeah. So, you have to look at it from this perspective. People want to do business with people. And I'll hear, yeah, but we buy from Amazon. Okay. So you got me on that one, but people still want to do business with people. Like tonight's my, my mom's birthday and we're going to this restaurant and the lady that owns this restaurant, we do business with her. Mm-hmm. I hire her for catering, things like that, because she is involved and invested in the community. And when we show up, like she knows things about us. And I'm like, you're stalking me on Facebook. That's how I know you know that, but good for you. But we do business with her. She has a restaurant with 20 employees, but we're going to go see Shelly. You know what I mean? And your business, the way you position your business in your community has to be around the people. And it doesn't necessarily have to be you, but it could be your people. It could be the people that are involved in the business. There's a local plumber that has been around for about 50 years. And now the son has taken over from the dad. And their motto has always been a flush beats a full house, which if you play cards, you know, it's the other way around. But that's their motto, a flush beats a full house. And Brady, the son, has continued that. But now what he's done is he's showing him, he has a dog that they call Flush. And Flush is in social media and commercials. They highlight their people constantly. And he is really focused on people. And so when you see somebody on Facebook or on Nextdoor say, hey, I have a clogged toilet or I need a plumber, like Jolly Plumbing is the name of the company that most of the time comes out of people's mouth in the crowded plumbing space because he gets really focused on his people. Now, a lot of people will say, well, his marketing and his branding is good. Why is it good? It's because he's focused on people. If you look at how to connect with people, your marketing and branding is going to be good. If you're just worried about always spewing facts and, about your business, like nobody is going to listen to that. I don't care if you're doing reels every day and it's going to be boring. Like you have to be able to be vulnerable and you have to be able to show people that you want to do business with them. And I think having a balanced, we'll call it a balanced diet of search and social, is important to a business long-term success. But I think the biggest factors are Google Maps on the search side, like making sure you're showing up for the keywords you need to be showing up for and doing the work to make sure that happens. And then on social, being present, always showing your people, having a connection. And if you can provide that, then you're going to continually get those rewards in return because search and social play together. Hey, I saw this commercial about Jolly Plumbing and it comes back to mind when I'm doing a search. I have a sink that I need to get fixed. Oh yeah, Jolly Plumbing. And there they are in search results. Boom, I'm clicking on that. So I think if you're focused on those two things primarily, you can build out the others with pay-per-click and building content and that stuff around it. But I think those two have to be your biggest and primary focuses related to local marketing.
Okay, that was a lot. And I want to circle back to where we started and we don't have a ton of time. And I'm going to ask you a question that you could spend a good hour or two on. So I'll ask for,
we'll try to be concise,
an impossible task on this one, but you started talking about your strength and desire to, go out and market and sell being sort of the focus of your approach in that first role in the mortgage space. And it's sort of carried through in everything that you've done. You work in a space, specifically the home services space, where in my experience, the vast majority of business owners in that space are focused on the thing they do. And let's just outsource the getting the leads. But you've shared a story or two about individuals who have actually gone into, you know, above and beyond and focused on the practical application of being seen, being noticed, and engaging outside of the work they do. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how you get a business owner who comes to you from the place of, hey, here's a bunch of money, do this for me, to actually getting engaged in this process themselves.
You know, I think one of the biggest things that I do in, and I'm still involved in the direct sales piece of our company. So I talk to almost every client at the sales process when we are communicating about what it is we do and then getting them to either engage or decide not to engage. So I'm involved in that still, getting close to not being, but right now I am. And part of that, and then I speak to different groups as well, but I have this same message, and that is, what are your goals? Like, what is it you're trying to accomplish? Right. And it goes back to, I said earlier, having a mission statement, a focused mission statement, and having core values. You have those items in place, and then you develop what your goals are, right? Maybe the goal for the business is to create legacy for the family. So a son's going to take over or whatever it may be, but determine what that goal is. Now, how are we going to accomplish that goal if you're the one changing out the toilet, or if you're the one replacing the furnace, or if you're the one putting the roof on the house, right? Number one. Number two, if your goal is legacy, you're trying to build something, which almost every business owner starts with legacy. That's typically what they do, especially in the home service space. Legacy something, right? Okay. So then what you need to do is look at how you can create opportunity for other people. If you think about businesses that are successful, very few of those businesses are successful because of one person, right? There's a team that's involved. And the more you invest into your team and build that team out, the more success you can have. But you have to be able to have the foundation, mission statement, core values, and then standard operating procedures to put into place. So I always, I go at it in a different way probably than most other agencies. I look at this as, if they're going to be successful with us, we have to help them be successful in their business. So if somebody comes to us and they're at the kind of the minimum stage of where we want to help somebody, which is around $500,000 in annual revenue, and they have a goal of creating legacy, $3, $4, $5 million annual revenue business. Okay. You're building the foundation, right? And too many times a business owner thinks that they're the foundation, and they're not, right? Mm-hmm. They have to build a foundation with people. They have to build a foundation with values. And as they build that foundation, then they can do the things that are necessary. So a lot of times, unfortunately, and you were exactly right, a lot of these businesses are technicians. They are really good at doing that piece of service. They aren't really good at the other things. So what we have to do is coach them and work with them to get to that. The problem is sometimes they now start to work on something that they're not really good at, and they get off focus on the things that they are good at. And acquiring people, to me, for any business, a talent, if you will, partners, whatever you want to call them, team, is the biggest and most important task of a business owner if they are in a position where they're trying to grow and scale. I work with this company in Michigan, and I've known this guy for probably 3 years. He does the best job that I know of in putting and giving his team the charge to be able to go do stuff, and he stays hands off. Me, I have a hard time with that. I'm going to stay hands off this week, I promise. And then 2 days later, like, hey, what's going on here? And my operations manager is always like, that's not hands off. But Scott, this guy in Michigan, he's very good at giving his people the ability to go do what he asked them to do, mm-hmm. and then report back in 30 days, a quarter, 6 months. And it's funny, we had a chance to spend time at a conference about 4 months ago, 5 months ago. And I'm always curious to listen to kind of his takes on that. He always wants to hear my takes on things, but I'm always interested in the people development that he's good at. And he doesn't even realize that he's good at it, which makes him even better. And so I was like, you know, what's the biggest thing you've learned in the approach that you've taken? And he said, well, the biggest thing that I've learned is the more I try to control something, the more that there's a problem. Where if I have a SOP in place and they know what my mission statement is and or the team's mission statement, and they know what the core values are of the company, as long as I made the right decision to put them in that spot, and if I leave them alone, they'll take it a lot farther than I could have taken it. And we talked about this one individual that he hired, 19-year-old kid, came in, very solid technician, but he could talk to people really, really well. And Scott went through two operations managers during about a 2-year period and just really wasn't having a lot of luck in that space. The operations manager was responsible for customer problems and scheduling. And this kid who over the 2 years, all of a sudden, 21, he's learning about the business. Scott sees him one day and he's like, this kid does everything that an operations manager is supposed to be. Helps out people. He talks to customers. He chips in on, you know, with other divisions of the company. He does all, because I'm just going to see if it's something he wants to do. So he talks to him. And of course, this kid's ecstatic, right? Yes, exactly what I want to do. And he put him in place. And within 3 months, the kid, not only, I call him a kid, he's not a kid, but he not only is able to champion that position and make it exactly what Scott wanted, but then he starts selling these big projects. Like he's hitting tickets of like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in a month. And Scott's like, if I had known this 2 years ago, I would have just given him the seat then. But my question was, so what did you do? He goes, I didn't do anything. He knew the core values. He knew what our SOPs were. And I basically said, hey, you want to be the operation manager? He said, yeah. He goes, great. You start Monday. He goes, we talk for 15 minutes. And I'd meet with him weekly and he gives me reports. I don't even know where he comes up with the reports, but he gives me the reports. And it goes back to trusting your team, but you have to trust yourself first to be able to hire the right people and bring the right people in. And then you have to build the foundation for them to be able to be successful. And I think that's what we work on more than anything else. And unfortunately, some business owners get it and some business owners don't want to give up the control. And I get that, but if you want to get to those levels, you have to, you know, you can't service 10,000 customers by yourself in a year.
Yeah. 100%. So I will suggest this, that if a business owner out there was resonating with what you just said about, you know, understanding, identifying your core values, wanting to live those core values for your business. And perhaps if you are dealing with, generational wealth opportunity with your business, right? Legacy, as you put it. And you're looking for some help, guidance, and a partner in the growth of your business. Gary might be your guy. So I think it's worth a visit to his website, and you can find out a little bit more about his business, which is Dominate Partners. Interesting spelling, which you'll discover when you get there, or you've discovered them in the show notes already. And the website is salvonow.com. That's SALVONOW.com. What is that a reference to?
So salvo is a French and German term from the First World War. It means shoot all your guns at once. And what better way to think about marketing than to give it all you got?
I love it. Hey, Gary Guyman, thank you so much for hanging out and perhaps concisely answering that last question. I appreciate that. There's so much more that I'm looking forward to discussing with you, and perhaps we can find an excuse to have you back for a further conversation.
Sounds great.
Indeed. Well, folks, this has been another episode of More Perfect Marketing. Thanks for your time, and I look forward to hearing you or seeing you back on another episode. All right, take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.